Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the February NJ EDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in the queue to speak and provide comments. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the one-zero command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star and then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Of course, Mr. Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, if we could do a roll call, please.
Okay. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo.
Here.
Orlene Caridi.
Present.
Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Jennifer Keys Maloney.
Here.
Jane Rosenblatt.
Here.
Brian Wilton.
Good morning, Manera. I'm here.
Okay. Phil Lenato.
Good morning. Phil's here.
Virginia Bauer.
Good morning. Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Rosemary Hicks.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Right. Thank you, Manera. The first bit of action here is to approve two sets of minutes, our January 15th regular meeting minutes, and then our January 15th executive session. And I just ask the voting board members if they could please follow the protocol of stating your name. We have, about a dozen votes to take today, and so let's get through these, at least the voting process, as expeditiously as possible. If there are questions and discussions, we have plenty of time for that. So thank you very much, everyone. Can I get a motion to approve the January 15th meeting minutes?
Fred Dumont,
Angelo.
Motion. Brian.
Thank you, Fred. Who was the second? There was crosstalk.
Phil, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Next item on the agenda is to approve the January 15th executive session meeting minutes. Can I get a motion to approve?
Marlene Caridi moves.
Thank you,
Robert
Angelo. Can
second.
I get a second? Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Thank you, everyone. I have a few brief remarks here this morning. I'm excited to kick off this meeting with some good news. We are reopening the PPE program to ensure that small businesses have access to PPE needed to remain open and continue to operate. Also today, the board will be considering a recommendation to increase funding for Sustain and Serve New Jersey. Sustain and Serve New Jersey launched in December to support New Jersey restaurants. The program provides funding to nonprofits to purchase pre-made meals from restaurants that have been impacted by the pandemic. Response to the program was overwhelming, and we anticipate getting millions of dollars to businesses struggling restaurants over the coming months. That response demonstrates New Jerseyans' continuing need programs. We remain committed to transparency and accountability and are actively taking steps to demonstrate that commitment. Today, in response to public feedback, we are recording our board meeting for the first time. These recordings will be available at a later date on our website. Additionally, I'm happy to announce the authority has launched its new website, which reflects the EDA's evolution into a more comprehensive economic development organization with info readily accessible. It is a 21st century website. It offers a far more user-friendly experience, and I encourage you to take a look. In keeping with our commitment to transparency and accountability, our new website will include a page that allows the public to submit comments online. This public comment feature will be added by the end of next week. We are actively soliciting input on programs established by the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020. This new law creates a number of new tax credit programs and other initiatives to support our work building a stronger, fairer New Jersey economy. It also includes program improvements to ensure fairness and accountability. I encourage anyone who is interested in these programs to submit comments. Now, to conclude, we are still in the grip of one of the worst health and economics in history, but there's a reason to be optimistic. Reopening the PPE program will help businesses continue to operate during the pandemic. Sustain and Serve New Jersey will provide crucial relief to struggling restaurants. New programs created by the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act will also help us to achieve an equitable recovery from the pandemic. The EDA is committed to listening to your input and working together to build a stronger, fairer economy that works for all New Jerseyans. Tim, if I could turn it over to you for the CEO report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to everyone on the call. We have a fair bit of business to get through, so I'll try and keep my remarks relatively brief, and you have a written report in your pack. Kind of two big thematics consistent with what Chairman Quinn was just describing. One is early activity under the Economic Recovery Act. So the governor signed that bill a month and 3 days ago. Not that anyone's counting. The early activities are underway, and we've made a lot of progress on some of the things that we can accomplish in the early weeks and months of this. One of the things we're going to do in the next couple days is, as Kevin just described, open an early public input process into all the various programs and elements that are included in that bill. The topic of incentives generally in the Economic Recovery Act is a topic that engenders lots of opinions, and this is an opportunity for us to hear early on from stakeholders, what they think we ought to be considering as we're structuring the programs, consistent with the law, of course. It's worth noting that is separate and apart from what will be the sort of Administrative Procedures Act driven public comment process once the board formally adopts the proposed rule process. So this is not this is a sort of an early look and an additional measure of transparency and input for the public that we're excited, and we'll launch that again in the next couple of days. Other activities under the new programs, under the new bill, the bill directs the EDA to stand up an Entrepreneur Zone working group to consider additional tools to bolster the innovation economy with a particular focus on equity and inclusion. We're in the process of standing that working group up. We'll have an announcement about that in the next couple of days as well. Who's going to be participating in that group and making recommendations to the governor and legislature on how that should proceed or how that could proceed. It's an interesting idea that was proposed by a number of stakeholders from academia and from particularly within the business community and the small business community to further bolster the opportunity to create more opportunities for entrepreneurship, particularly for communities of color and urban centers in New Jersey. Other activity under the bill, the bill creates the chief compliance officer position within EDA. That's a position that has existed by practice for the last year or two, probably two and a quarter years. I was honored to send the governor and the Senate president and the speaker a letter notifying them that Bruce Sciella is going to fill that position. He's our chief compliance and chief operations and compliance officer, but he'll be the chief compliance officer for the purposes of that bill. He's done such extraordinary work, particularly in the last two and a half years, to help us fix what needs fixing with regard to the issues identified by the many reports that came to our came across, were brought to our attention, as well as running a lot of our COVID programs somehow at the same time. And so thrilled to have made that appointment of Bruce, who's just an extraordinary leader of our team, within our team. There's also a ton of activity going on programmatically around small business and COVID. Specifically, as the chairman just mentioned, we're going to reopen the PPE program and run another round of that. The Sustain and Serve program is an exciting opportunity to support, we think, a significant number of restaurants and importantly, bolster the governor's food security alleviation strategy. We're also, importantly, and this was we made an announcement about this last week. We entered into a partnership with the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia around creating what's called a research in action lab, but specifically focused on minority-owned business and sort of pairing our in-market expertise and resources with obviously the extraordinary expertise and resources of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. This is something that Ty Cooper has been leading the charge on within our team, to really make sure that we're working with them and leveraging their data and their expertise to develop programs and resources to support not just small business growth, but particularly equitable and inclusive small business development. So a lot going on. We have a number of exciting projects and programs to talk about today. We'll get there in a couple minutes, but the Hinchliff Stadium redevelopment project in Patterson is an extraordinary, I think, milestone and accomplishment. Looming accomplishment. The amount of history that lives within that stadium that is today in disrepair and in need of renovation is extraordinary. I think the effort that's been brought together at the state and local level to bring that project towards completion is just an extraordinary opportunity to do some sustainable community-centered development in Patterson. So great opportunities and lots of exciting things on the agenda today. And with that, we'll yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Now, moving forward with the agenda, we will have committee chairs briefly report out to the board prior to their respective committees portion of the agenda. Now, as chair of the policy committee, I can share that the next two agenda items from the Office of Economic Transformation represent exciting new initiatives being taken on by the EDA, including the launch of NJ Collaborate, an innovation ecosystem building pilot program, and the New Jersey Wind Turbine Tech Training Challenge, designed to expand technical career pathways and credential skills and job opportunities for the trades. These are exciting programs aligned with the governor's vision for a stronger and fairer New Jersey. Later in the agenda, under authority matters, we will have two additional administrative items pertaining to adjusting titles for signing authority and the continuance of an MOU between the authority and the Capital City Redevelopment Corporation. Now, the first item under economic transformation is NJ Collaborate. Clark Smith, Technology Sector Lead North, Technology and Life Sciences Investments, will be presenting. Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everyone. So this memo is for a new product, NJ Collaborate, which will support the execution of innovation-centric programs here in New Jersey. Collaborate will fit into our range of new tools in our innovation toolkit. This toolkit includes programs like NJ Ignite, Accelerate, Founders and Funders, as well as Angel Tax Credits and the NOL program, which have been built and enhanced over the last few years. This product is new and highly sought after tool that was made possible by the ERA legislation. So this Collaborate program will support in the form of a grant to fund direct expenses to execute these programs. The grant amount would range from $10,000 to $250,000, subject to a 50% matching requirement. So every EDA dollar must be matched one-to-one. We request a $3 million pool to be deployed over a three-year pilot period. Delegated approval authority is also requested for projects $100,000 and below. In implementation, a joint application would be submitted to the EDA by a primary applicant with a collaborative applicant. This application would be for their joint program or event here in New Jersey. Primary applicants would be New Jersey nonprofits, colleges or universities, industry trade groups, or government entities. Collaborative applicants would be New Jersey Corporation, healthcare networks, real estate developers, or research centers. An application can include other groups as well, but at least one would need to meet the requirements of a primary applicant and one for a collaborative applicant. An acceptable program must fall into one of three verticals, or what we're calling focus areas. The first is support for startups, defined as startup mentorship programs, competitions, facilities, or pilot programs. The second is innovation infrastructure, defined as application challenges, public sector challenges, or innovation labs. And the third is collaborative research platforms, defined as research showcases, student competitions, shared research labs, PhD mentorship programs, or campus innovation centers. An application would be scored and required to exceed a minimum score in order to be approved. Once approved, the recipients would have 12 months to complete their project. Grant funding would be deployed 50% upfront and the remaining 50% dispersed after completion of the program with cost and match funding verification. To kickstart ideas and collaboration, the EDA would host a series of meetings between stakeholders that we're calling convenings. I'd also like to make everyone aware, programs that target diversity and inclusion initiatives will receive the following: an increase in the matching ratio to 1.25 to $1 with a corresponding increase to the grant amount, a decrease in the minimum required score to approve an application, and we'll have at least one convening that is specifically dedicated to the topic of diversity and inclusion. These were developed and will be evaluated in collaboration with the EDA's diversity officer. NJ Collaborate aligns well with the governor's economic development plan to build out the innovation economy. Numerous successful examples of similar projects by public and private partnerships exist in other states, so the benefits to NJ are clear. NJ Collaborate will facilitate and the interaction between the state's innovators and stakeholders, strengthening New Jersey's economy. With that concludes my comments. Are there any questions at this time?
Do we have any questions for Clark? If there's no questions for Clark, can I get a motion to approve?
Virginia
Don't
Bauer.
Move, Charles Sharlow.
Sorry.
Thank you, Virginia. Can I get a second?
Marlene Caridi, second.
Great. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda, New Jersey Wind Turbine Tech Training Challenge. Julia Cortry, Project Officer, presenting. Julia?
Hi, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. So today I'll be talking about the New Jersey Wind Turbine Tech Training Challenge. So we are asking members to approve the launch of the new program, the New Jersey Wind Turbine Tech Training Challenge, to help EDA catalyze the development of local training programming for a crucial offshore wind occupation, offshore wind turbine technician. It'll be the first of its kind training in the state, and the grant, the challenge itself will be structured as a grant competition. All community colleges are eligible to submit proposals for establishing this program. And the winning applicant will receive a grant of $1 million to support implementation. This funding will come from the funds, exclusively from the funds that the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, or BPU, provided to EDA per our offshore wind sector initiatives MOU from this past September to support offshore wind workforce development. So offshore wind turbine technicians install, maintain, and repair wind turbines. They apply hydraulic and electrical skills, as well as mechanical skills, to ensure that turbines are able to operate effectively. These specific skill needs are why we focus on community colleges as a primary applicant. It's also one of the fastest growing occupations in the country, with an expectation to grow 61% from 2019 to 2029. So significantly outpacing most other occupations. So it's a great opportunity for workforce development. And then in terms of program design, all New Jersey community colleges are eligible to submit applications that propose a solution to build and operate an offshore wind turbine technician training program that includes a credit-bearing certificate and pathway to associate's degree or higher, as well as creates a clear and inclusive pathway for students to enter the wind industry and launch the certificate program by the end of 2022. And we see this grant as an opportunity, as really a seed funding to support a sustainable program in the future. And in terms of timeline, we are seeking to launch the program in March with notice of funding availability released March 1st and the program disbursement beginning in Q2 around late June. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any, and thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Julia. Any questions for Julia?
Chair, it's Fred Dumont. I have a number of questions.
And I'll be behind.
All right, Fred, please.
So, and thank you for that. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the duties of a wind turbine technician, and it includes install, maintain, and repair wind turbines. You know, we talked a lot, and we put in policies where we're going to construct these, the windmills and stuff like that under a project labor agreement, using our building trades people. And I talked to a member or a leader in the building trades this morning who told me their workforce was 40% out of work. So obviously they're out there looking for work. Was it ever thought about including some apprenticeship programs in this grant process so we could utilize people who already have skills in this in these activities?
Thank you for the question. And it sounds like Brian is about to jump in as well. I'll just note that community colleges are also able to collaborate with training providers and labor unions and other industries. So the primary applicant does need to be community colleges, but there's still an opportunity for unions to play an active role. And I'll let Brian say a little bit more.
Yeah, Julia, thanks for that comment. Gord and Fred, thank you for the question. As you recall, when we set up the last GWO training facility challenge, we had specifically called out that we were looking for partnerships with labor and training providers, including community colleges and other groups. For this program, I think it's the same spirit, just by nature of the kind of how the government funding flows work. We have to have a direct applicant who is a community college, but we are certainly encouraging participation with unions and other providers who are able to help create that pathway into the workforce. We fully expect that, as you said, the installation, kind of the service of those will be done largely under union labor, so that kind of those connections early on make a lot of sense.
So that's why, Brian, a lot of labor unions have apprenticeship programs, and I think Rob Shimko can even talk better than I can about this, that are accredited, and they give credits out for community colleges. So I think that's a logical path here for helping people who are out of work already but have some basic training in, you know, it's talk about mechanical, electrical. It just seems like a natural avenue for this would be to turn to the building trades unions, and I would like to see them included in possibly receiving some of this grant money.
Well, certainly we will continue to look, especially on the apprenticeship side, with the Department of Labor, who I know has a tremendous effort around that, and the commissioner's team has been doing great stuff. We'll look for additional partnerships regarding this grant program, certainly can take a look at how we can further bolster connections. We have a little bit of time between now and when this will launch. I will note that one of the reasons that we had looked at this is because we are not the first state to be looking at wind turbine technician training programs. In fact, it's a fairly well-established pathway for onshore wind in the Midwest and in the South, and then kind of burgeoning north of us in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, especially they're building programs. They have tended to be anchored at some of the community colleges, but certainly there are many partnerships with unions as well.
Robert Shimka here. I'd like to add some comments about the training myself. We do have partnerships with community colleges for training. We, Local 400 in Monmouth County, has a program with Brookdale Community College for an associate's degree. But the comment I'd like to make would be, listen, my apprenticeship program is a five-year apprenticeship program to become an electrician. Now, to learn the electrical side and the mechanical side, it would have to be almost a seven-year process in order for you to, most likely to become a wind turbine technician. So we would definitely like to have some input with the community colleges to try to, you know, make a program where it would be easy for people to learn it in a quicker fashion, because depending on how quickly the wind turbine is going to go, you're looking at a 3 to 5 years from now, most likely. You are just going to get done with your electrical training in those 5 years, let alone a wind turbine technician. So I would appreciate if the trades, not only the electrical but mechanical trades, can get some input in with the community colleges on the training. Yeah, I think it would benefit everybody in the state of New Jersey.
Well, thank you. I appreciate Robert. Those comments. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Tim, that all makes sense. It sounds to me like, based on what Brian was saying to Fred's question, that the trades can and should and will encourage them to be partners with the community colleges, and then to Robert's point, I think, why don't we set up maybe an offline call to sort of talk through the way to advance what Robert was just describing, because I agree with that 1,000%.
Hey, real quick, it's Rob Angelo. Just on the funding piece, I mean, I'm not privy exactly to the funding mechanism here, but I do know from my experience over the past 3 years that sometimes funding is easier when it's given from a state entity to another state or a public entity. That's been our experience at the Department of Labor. I'm guessing that's public underpinning why community colleges are the main grantee. But obviously, I clearly believe, one, because DOL is on the board to evaluate applications. And I would imagine that even if it weren't, that community colleges who are partnering with U.S. DOL registered apprenticeship programs are going to be seen in a much better light than those who aren't.
Chair, it's Fred again. Can I make a recommendation? Do we hold off voting on this today and until we're able to work out some of these details more?
Tim, are you good with this as well?
Yeah, we can take some time on this.
This is Rosemary. That's great. I agree, because I had a number of questions as well that I want to make sure that we don't lose when we talk about diversity and inclusion. So I think that's a great idea to table.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next item on our agenda, which is Venture and falls under the Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia Marley's our chair there. Marcia, would you like to offer a few words before we move to the next item?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes. The Director's Loan and Review Committee evaluated and discussed the proposal for a limited partnership investment in the Venture Capital Fund, Edison Partners 10. I want to thank the staff for a thorough presentation to the committee of the proposal and the financials of Edison Partners. As an aside, I was encouraged personally to learn that the company recently launched a diversity initiative that is committed to investing in businesses led by underserved community members, a goal shared by the EDA and promoted by the EDA. Chairman, I am pleased to see the proposal move to the board for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. So let's proceed. The item is Edison Partners 10, Limited Partnership. Tim Rollander, Technology Sector Lead South. Tim?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Mercier. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you all today. This morning, we do have a recommendation for a venture fund commitment of up to $4 million to Edison Partners Fund 10. The manager is targeting a $425 million fund to make growth equity investments in approximately 16 to 18 companies with revenues generally $8 to $30 million at time of investment. The strategy is designed to capitalize on an undervalued part of the market operating in underserved geographies east of the Rockies, outside Silicon Valley, Boston, and New York City, typical venture hotbed areas. The fund is again committed to deploy $2 to $1 in addition to EDA's commitment into New Jersey-based companies. The fund is managed by the same or substantially similar group of individuals associated with the firm's prior three funds, to all of which the EDA has committed in the past. The group has delivered consistently positive returns and will seek to do the same for Fund 10, of course. Edison Partners has maintained a disciplined investment approach even as the strategy has moved gradually to focus on later stage deals over time. As part of their strategy, the group seeks to offer best-in-class portfolio management to maximize capital efficiency and help companies grow faster with their operational acumen. It's a tremendous support for portfolio companies versus other firms of comparable size. More than their pure return profile, Edison's historic presence in New Jersey has been a boon for the technology community in the state. As investors in Edison's six prior funds, EDA has seen firsthand the substance of their interaction with the community. Further aligning with the EDA's objectives to support a diverse and inclusive economy, the firm has demonstrated defined policies towards diversity and inclusion at the firm level and with regard to their investment activities. Edison Partners is the largest growth equity firm in New Jersey, and we have a long history of success with the manager as it regards both job creation and financial return. The full analysis, including supplemental materials, have been provided to the board, so we are requesting approval to proceed with a commitment of up to $4 million to Edison Fund 10. I'm happy to answer any questions, if any, but thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Do we have any questions for Tim?
Hi, this is Rosemary. I have a couple. One is, you said that they have a history of doing good investments or investing in diversity and inclusion. Can you or do we have a list of those companies that are companies of color that they've actually invested in, or a percentage of those investments that have occurred in for businesses of color? And
yeah.
My other question is regarding coming into underserved communities. Are there investors coming into underserved communities and making money, or are you coming into underserved communities and investing in the businesses that are there? And my last one question is, are there no venture fund or companies of color that we can also partner with? So those are my three questions.
Thank you very much, Rosemary. I appreciate it. So I'll try and take those in order. So we do have a list of companies that are led or founded by diverse entrepreneurs provided by the manager. They provided a deep analysis of their own history, which was included in the DLRC package, which Ms. Marley referenced earlier. So we're happy to kind of speak to that in more detail in a later conversation, if that's helpful. They are open to investing in underserved communities. They don't have a specific mandate to invest in underserved communities, to address your second question. They have what I think is popularly thought of a top-down and bottoms-up approach in terms of investing, where they approach the market with specific theses, and then they have a team of individuals that really dig deep to find deals on the ground. So they don't have a specific mandate to invest in underserved communities, but they do have a deep team that will widely canvass the market, and they have found opportunities throughout New Jersey, specifically in different markets, which might be considered underserved as well. We can talk to those again in a separate conversation. And could you kind of reiterate your third question for me, actually?
I was just asking if there were other venture capital funds of color that we can tap into, or investments that what we're doing here.
And Tim, this is Kathleen. Maybe I can help you on some of these as well. Sorry, Mark.
Yeah,
don't be a quick call. So I would just add, Marjorie, you may recall that as part of our annual venture review that we prepare for audit committee, we went and did a deep dive analysis on all of our venture fund portfolio companies and which ones have historically invested in diverse entrepreneurs. We define diverse entrepreneurs along the lines with this, what the state defines as in order to issue a women or minority business certificate. And we're happy to share that with you again. I would say that Edison, again, has made a specific policy and carve out for their current fund to invest in diverse entrepreneurs. That certainly includes Black entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, and we can give you the exact definition that they are using. And then thirdly, I would just say that they, the firm, although not a strictly Black-managed firm, has taken specific measures to increase the level of diversity at the management level. So generally in venture, there are very few women. This firm has a managing partner who is a general partner who is a woman and have several high-ranking women in the organization that are elevating. They also have a Black partner as well who is leading their diversity efforts. So not the narrow definition of just Black entrepreneurs and Black managers, but aligning with the state certification around women and minority businesses. And we did attach to the materials the firm's commitment and focus around diversity and inclusion. That was part of the committee package, and if you don't have that, we're happy to share that with you as well.
I have it in front of me. I just because there's a lot of information here, I was unable to find it again as I started my questions because I'm interested in the language in which they describe what their commitment is. In terms of the diversity, I know that we talk a lot about diversity and we say women or minority, and what tends to happen is that it's more women than minority. And I just think that if we're standing up companies with millions of dollars, that we need to make sure that what we put in a narrative, because that's the narrative that's now out there for a lot of companies as we reassess the landscape of how well we've done as an organization, I think we just need to make sure that there is some teeth behind a statement that says that they're going to do something. And I also think that we need to pay special attention to minority or diversity, that diversity includes people of color and not just women.
Yeah, hey, Rosemary, Tim, let me just add into to that. A couple things. One, I agree with you 1,000%. I was going to say 100, but I upgraded to 1,000%. A couple things to advance that. One, we had done right before the pandemic hit, taken some steps around launching a Black and Latinx focused seed fund that got a bit sidelined by, you know, what happened in the last 11 months. But stay tuned. I think we'll hopefully have some happy news on that in the next couple months. There's a disparity study underway, which shouldn't be that hard to prove that there's not nearly enough venture capital flowing to founders of color. And it's women, it's people of color. And if you cross multiply that to women of color, it's intestinally small.
Right.
And so hopefully put some specific resources, meaningful dollars behind that. Not quite ready for prime time yet, but working hard on that specifically to launch a dedicated effort just around that.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to see the details. I'm still scrolling. There's a lot of information. If somebody could just maybe carve out that specific piece where they have that narrative on what their commitment is and then what they've actually done for in terms of diversity as far as funding, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosemary. Any other questions? All right. If there's no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer. This is Jennifer. Motion.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second is Jennifer. Marley.
Okay. Marcia, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Aye.
All right, thank you.
Marie.
Sorry,
you are, I'm sorry, are you recusing, opposing, or abstaining?
I'm abstaining.
Okay. Dave, do you need any other?
The only question, but I think this is not the case, if you're abstaining to a recusal, but I'm assuming you are abstaining solely as to not to vote yes or no.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Now, the next four items on our agenda fall under incentives. In the Incentives Committee, and Jenny Bauer is our chair there. Jenny, would you like to offer a few words ahead of the four items?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. The Incentives Committee met on January 28th, and I just want to remind the board what the role of the Incentives Committee is, which is to primarily review any of the incentives, including tax credits, that are submitted before the board, and most importantly, to consider any formula or scoring changes that are due to any changes in legislation. On a personal note, I once more want to just commend this amazing staff who spent diligent time, as you can see, in doing their due diligence to make sure that the committee has a full understanding of what our incentives are and what tax credits we're providing. And I just want to thank Tim and the staff for doing that. We have four major items that we have to go forward, and our CEO, Tim, has already highlighted the Hinchcliffe Master Urban Renewal Plan. So I guess, unless there's any questions, I think we'll move forward and let David Lawyer present for us.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny. So let's go to that first item. It falls under ERG, the Hinchcliffe Master Urban Renewal LP, Housing and the Hinchcliffe Housing Urban Renewal Associates, Life Management Incorporated, Mixed Use Parking, Economic Redevelopment and Growth Grant Program. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. The members are asked to approve the application of Hinchcliffe Master Urban Renewal, LP, for a project located in Patterson City for the issuance of tax credits pursuant to the Mixed-Use Parking ERG Program of the Authority as set forth in the New Jersey Economic Opportunity Act of 2013. The total costs of this project are estimated to be $93.8 million, and of this amount, $79.2 million are eligible costs under the program. Our recommendation is to award 100% of actual eligible parking costs and 80% of the total actual eligible project costs allocated to residential housing and stadium uses. This results in an award not to exceed $67.2 million. The project includes three components: the renovation of a 7,800-seat historic stadium, recreation and cultural facility, the new construction of a six-story, 75-unit senior affordable housing building, and the new construction of a four-story, 315-space parking garage. The stadium complex will include new construction of a two-story restaurant and exhibition space of approximately 12,000 square feet. This project is supported by the City of Patterson, as it is listed as a critical project in a letter from the Mayor of Patterson to the EDS. Construction is expected to begin this month in conjunction with the closing of financing, The anticipated completion of the project is August of 22. This date is consistent with the December 2023 required date of construction completion and temporary issuance of CO. As shown in the analysis, total project costs are $93.8 million. Our analysis excludes an eligible cost totaling $14.5 million, which is comprised of a development fee, specific acquisition costs, escrows, and reserves. The applicant has arranged its sources of financing as shown, and all funding sources are approved, committed, and supported by the organization providing the financing. There is a 20% equity contribution requirement, which will be satisfied via the aggregation of deferred developer fee, historic tax credits, and low-income housing tax credits. A gap analysis was completed for this project, and the purpose of that analysis is to determine if there's a shortfall in the project's return on investment for the developer. We compared the project's internal rate of return, also known as the IRR, to the maximum return a developer would require to complete the project. The hurdle rate, as referred to in the analysis, was calculated in an independent analysis completed by Jones Lang LaSalle. With the benefit of the ERG, the IRR is 4.7%, which is below the hurdle rate provided by JLL of 14% for a comparable subsidized project located in the city of Patterson. So in conclusion, based on our analysis, we recommend an award of not to exceed $67.2 million. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David?
Yes, still a logic. Hey, David, what are they going to use this 7,900-seat stadium for?
Well, it's going to have multiple purposes. The Patterson Public Schools will use it for various sporting games, graduations, and other type of events. And it can also host recreational events from the local community.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Other questions for David? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Marlene Caridi will second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item under incentives, the Grow New Jersey Assistance Program, Professional Disposable International. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Yes, sir. Sorry, flipping my page here. I apologize. I got a little stuck moment. So Professional Disposables was awarded, getting there. I'm so sorry for the delay, sir.
We Susan, it happens to all of us.
We ran out of order, Chairman.
Did you want me to skip to, we did have the COVID relief policies and delegations up before that in the memo, in the line of the agenda. Would you like me to get back to that one or do PDI?
Whichever one that you are prepared to deliver.
Okay. Well, why don't I start with the COVID-related relief, if you don't mind? I've got my notes all right in front
sure.
of me. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay, so this is a request for delegation to staff with a signature by the COO to amend GROW New Jersey awards in accordance with some new COVID relief provisions that have been enacted. Of course, all delegated memos or delegated authority approvals would be reported to the members quarterly, but as you'll see, there's a couple of options here where we would want to come to you as we process. So, as you all know,
the law requires GROW projects to evidence project completion, that's jobs and capital investment, within 3 years, but for approved extensions. Once certified, projects have to continue to meet employment requirements annually or risk forfeiting tax credits and potentially recapturing the potential recapturing of previously issued tax credits. Over the last year or so, the governor has issued a series of executive orders to respond to the pandemic, of course, beginning with the stay-at-home order and followed by an imposition of certain safety measures at workplaces. In recognition of the potential negative impacts that the emergency may have had on businesses, the legislature and agency actions have been taken to ensure that GROW businesses are not penalized due to the safety measures that were really needed to respond to the pandemic. These included legislative amendments allowing projects to request additional time to complete, a rule waiver allowing employees to work remotely, additional time to file a 2019 compliance report, and the exclusion of months from the average employment calculation for the 2020 reporting year. On January 7th of 21, a handful of provisions were passed to provide flexibility to GROW businesses that may have been impacted by COVID while reducing or deferring states' financial obligations. And I'll review those for you now, and we can talk about how we're going to, we'd like to implement them. So first is a suspension of the 2020 or 2021 compliance and tax credits. This is an election available for all certified projects for the tax year of 2020 and 21 should the pandemic exceed into March. In effect, this defers the compliance obligations and tax credit to the end of the current eligibility period. So what this would do would allow a business to kind of take a pause on this year and tack it to the back of their natural 10-year run. So if this was their year four, now their year four, we would expect no, once they've made this election, we would expect no compliance reporting for this year, and we would expect them to pick up in year 11, and that's when they would be able to get their credit for so that they have a full 10 years in the end. The second option is called the job reset. This election allows all GROW businesses to reduce the number of new or retained full-time jobs at the QBF, that's Qualified Business Facility, beginning with the 2020 tax year. Upon receipt of this election, we would recalculate the award using the calculation methodology in existing regulations. Staff will determine the base amount or visits eligibility of bonuses, apply per job caps, and rerun the net benefit where the current policy dictates. Currently, we rerun the net benefit if there's a decrease in jobs of more than 25% or 10% if the project already has a net benefit test cap on it. The memo goes into the detail about how we would apply this calculation to over $4 million and gross and Garden State growth zone projects. We would do it consistent with the existing calculation policy. Under no circumstances would awards increase as a result of this. And these requests would need to demonstrate some connectivity to the COVID emergency and why they're asking. All right, the next one up here on the memo is a new provision that allows the CEO to negotiate deferral of annual tax credits. The statute allows the CEO to negotiate the deferral of tax credits, and they'd be brought to the board for consideration. We will be coming back to the board with more information on that as that policy is developed. And finally, you'll see termination as an option here. Termination is available to all projects that can demonstrate changes to business model, real estate decisioning, job declines related to COVID-19, and can be requested through the end of 2020. This allows businesses that have not received credits to avoid ongoing compliance obligations. And for those businesses that have already been awarded credits, this allows them to exit the agreement without any recapture of what they've already received. All of the terminations would be brought to the board, and they would certainly need to show us their impacts from COVID
that brought them to this decision. And the board would have an opportunity to hear that and to vote on it. All of the fees here would be those fees that are already in existing regulations. The delegation itself is for us to approve the job reset. It's mathematical to our thinking, so there really isn't a requirement or a need for further decisioning, so we think that is appropriate for staff delegation. Historically, we have brought modifications of that type if the job reset or the job decrease was greater than 25% to the board for consideration. However, as I said, this does not require or does not involve other aspects of the project changing. So there would be no project scope change, no capital investment change, nothing but jobs. This is for businesses that have already certified and have actual costs certified in their completion materials. Also, any elections that we receive where we feel that the connection to COVID is not credible or not fleshed out, those would be brought to the board, as well as any elections that that the staff feels should be declined. And I think that's it. So I'm happy to, I know there's a lot there, so I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. It's Tim. Kevin, if it's okay with you, I'll just add kind of a minute of commentary and framing on this. I think the purpose of this item is sort of twofold. One is to obviously seek your approval for some policy orientation around some of the statutory changes that were made in the Economic Recovery Act to provide some flexibility for GROW recipients because of COVID. Second, it's also a way for us to provide having this discussion in public and hopefully adopting this recommendation as a way to provide some guidance to the several hundred GROW program participants. This only obviously applies to folks who are in good standing and who have done everything they said they were supposed to do. I break this into sort of two categories. One is something that I think will happen reasonably frequently over the next several months, which is businesses ringing us up and saying that they've got a 2020 problem because they did the right things and they have a compliance problem with the letter of the 80% rule. In particular, 80% of your time has to be in the qualified business facility. Well, if folks have been working from home or if they've had obviously following the governor's public health executive orders, they'd be doing so. If they're a manufacturer and they have social distancing requirements, or if they've any of a number of circumstances that could reduce their on-site headcount during this challenging period, they basically get to defer a year and sort of a hold harmless. That I think we'll see a decent number of volume. The termination piece we would bring back to the board. That's obviously a weighty matter. I hope we don't see many of those, but you certainly could imagine some circumstances where a significant economic crisis could have a lasting effect. Hopefully, as things get back to normal as soon as humanly possible, that will alleviate the potential for those. We certainly could see some of those. I hope we don't see many, but you never know. Those would be brought back to the board. In any circumstances where there'd be an adjustment to the jobs numbers, we obviously would do what you'd expect us to do, which is recalculate the net benefit test and make sure that awards are adjusted accordingly in 100% compliance with both the statute and with the spirit of the state getting what it bargained for from these businesses. And so I think this is a sensible and pretty comprehensive package. Again, that this is providing some additional kind of interpretation and meat on the bones, if you will, around what's in the statute that the governor just signed in January. And so I think it's a prudent step for us to be able to provide some guidance to businesses that are starting to get anxious about how their grow circumstances, how COVID affects their grow circumstances. So obviously happy to answer any questions, and thanks, Susan, for a thorough presentation.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Susan. Any questions for Susan?
This is Rose Marie. I have a couple. I guess the first one is that I know that you said later, as you went through each of the individual sections, that you would be bringing it back to the board. But I guess I would be a little concerned if we're saying that the report is going to happen quarterly, which is possibly 3 months after the fact that that we're being notified of a change that may or may not be significant. So I guess that would be one concern. What do you bring back to the board monthly, or what are you bringing back to the board quarterly? Because you sort of hack a lot of different processes under one delegated authority for the GROW program.
Busy memo, yes. So let me jump in on that.
Two things. One, we can certainly report that monthly. I do think there will be monthly level volume on this, particularly in the next 6 months, because I do think we're going to see a fair amount of folks looking to defer their either 2019 or 2020, but particularly their 2020 or 2021 awards. In terms of the definitionally, the decisioning is not particularly significant because it's spelled out in statute. It's kind of by it's pretty the discretion that either the board or the staff has is pretty straightforward in terms of if they as long as the public health emergency is in effect, the statute directs that the company can make this election. So it's mostly kind of recording that election, and so having to report that monthly versus quarterly, that's not a problem.
Right. I'll just add to that. So of the items on there, the job reset would be delegated where appropriate. We can certainly report that monthly. The suspensions would be kind of a pure election, so those can certainly be reported out to the board. But any terminations would be brought to the board. And as I said, any declinations or concerns with fact patterns, those kinds of things, or anything complicated or we feel is beyond the routine and just what the law prescribes, of course, we come back to the board for input and approval.
Okay, my other question is regarding maybe we could sunset this, that maybe after a year, because I believe a lot of this is being sort of led by the fact that we are in the pandemic or COVID. So opposed to this going on infinitely, is there a possibility to provide a sunset provision on this delegated authority and then for us to look at it again after a certain period of time to see if it's still appropriate or if it's happening the way that we need it to occur?
I believe the entirety of the authority, irrespective of whether it's delegated or not, sunsets or is specifically in the statute triggered by the public health emergency declaration. So it will sunset irrespective of the delegated authority nature.
When will it
legislature and governor could choose? The legislature and governor could choose to extend that, but that's
above my
pay grade, as they say.
Yeah, it's generally a one-time offer. It may be last year, this year, because that's the impact, but they were designed not as a long-term provision that could, you know, somebody could take advantage of, say, 5 years from now.
Okay. All right. And I guess my other question, well, it's not a question, it's just a statement that I know that I'm just concerned about the issue of jobs and if folks aren't meeting the requirement of the job since it's only one piece of the total GROW funding that they can in effect side-skirt it if they resolve or are in compliance in other areas. But I have a concern about the impact of them not meeting job requirements when the whole purpose of GROW is to make sure that there are jobs in the communities, especially those that are underserved and minority communities. So I'm just feeling a little goofy on that one. And maybe I don't really understand it, but just wanted to put it out there.
If they miss on their jobs, that's a compliance problem, irrespective of this policy. If they miss on the, if they have a deferral for a year to have sort of a grace period to sort of adjust from COVID and move on, then they'd be in compliance and they'd be able to get their full award. But if they reduce the number of jobs, and that reduces their award concurrently. And if they have zero jobs, that reduces their award all the way to zero.
Right. I think the positive side of what you're raising is certainly we'd love to keep these businesses in the GROW and ensure we have kind of a clause in the jobs going forward, even if they unfortunately have declined a bit. But in all these cases, we will have gotten the capital investment, which is a big driver to the locations, we'll certainly be watchful of the causes of decrease and try to keep as many grows on the straight and narrow as Tim mentioned.
And anyone who's seeking to exercise their option to seek the ability to walk away, essentially terminate their agreement, that will come to the board for a specific vote up or down on whether, you know, business X should be permitted to avail itself of that provision of the statute. I hope and expect that there will be very few of those, but you never know.
Okay, I get that a lot of this is financially driven, and that we may be able to recoup dollars, but the whole purpose of this is more than dollars. It really is to make sure that there is something sustainable and impactful that is positive for those communities. So I just think that we need to make sure that we don't lose that. That's it.
Other questions for Susan? If we have no other questions for Susan or Tim, can I get a motion to approve?
Oh, my God.
Fred Dumont motion.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Jennifer T. Maloney, second.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Let's go to the next item, Back to the Future, Professional Disposable International. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Ready to go this time.
All right. All right.
Thank you. Okay, so this request is for a 45.7% reduction in the number of new jobs for this project, from 265 jobs down to 144 new jobs. As a result of the change, the approved award would decrease from 7.99 million to 6.20. All other terms and conditions of the GROW award would be consistent with the original approval. There are no other changes to scope, as you'll hear. This is focused specifically on the jobs piece. So Professional Disposables International, PDI, is a manufacturer of infection prevention and sanitization products and provider of contract manufacturing and R&D services that serve the medical and food service industries. On May 11th of 17, the members approved a 10-year GROW for $7.99 million. To create 265 new jobs and retain 43 existing jobs at an existing 89,000 square foot qualified business facility, or QBF, in Woodcliff Lake Borough. The intended capital investment at the time was $12.7 million. So as PDI was moving along in its project, it actually has spent at this point $12.7 million. Their project is up and running, and they have employees. Obviously, given COVID, they may not all be sitting there at the QBF, but they are up and running at this time. They were getting to the point of considering certification. However, their employment numbers are not going to reach the 265 that was originally approved. They would like to change that to 144. And the reason that they cited was that they were advised by a consultant at approval that they ought to set their anticipated new job count based on the capacity of the building that they were building or that they were rehabbing. They do have a hiring plan that would reach that number over time, but it is not possible within the time period for their project completion certification. So they're requesting that that the board approve a reset at this time from 265 to 144. To date, they do have 162 folks on 119 of which are new. We reran the grant calculator and determined that they would lose a bonus, a $500 bonus, for a large number of full-time employees due to the decrease in jobs. The award is $6.2 million. While they had a 90% annual withholding limiter on the project due to where it's located, the increase in the salaries that they're paying their folks has eliminated any limitation as it is. We run the grant calculator and it projects what the potential withholdings are, and that can produce a second number which businesses can look at as what they're probably going to be limited as an award. And that that limiter does not come up in the grant calculator anymore as they've increased all the salaries about $20,000 across the board. So given that this is a reduction of more than 25%, this exceeds our delegation. We have determined the net benefit still demonstrates to be over $70 million over 20 years. And as I said, the rest of the project aligns. This is really specifically about the jobs piece. So that is my spiel. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Questions for Susan?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
You said, first of all, that they made a mistake initially when they put this proposal in suggesting that they were going to create that many new jobs, right? They still plan to get there, but not for a long time.
Right, right. There's a natural 3 years to get these things done, and they've gotten extensions out to a four-year mark, I believe, but their hiring plan would not achieve the number necessary to get to that original approved number within the time period they need to come in and certify completion.
All right. Just on your graph, on your table, you have median salary at $100,000, but mean salary at $122,000. So actually, the median salary went down, but the from the original, and the mean salary went up. So you had a few very high-paying jobs, right?
Well, we saw the average salary of the.
Yes, that's the mean.
Yes, we saw the averages go up most of the employees. I think the higher end employees, I don't think there was a shift there. I think this was the everyday employee that got that bump.
Okay. It's not reflected in the median salary compared to at approval. That's all I'm saying, which is went down. I just want to say that I think that going forward, we should check on calculating these awards based on new jobs and not so much the salary, as long as the salaries are good salaries, but on number of new jobs created.
The new program, the new Emerge, which is not doesn't exist. It's existing statute, but does not yet exist programmatically yet. Makes a much heavier emphasis, Marcia, on new jobs versus retained. Exactly, as you just described. Not to zero. There's still benefits for retention, but not nearly the same quantum as the prior program.
Right. The calculator here does focus on the number of jobs, but there are certain bonuses that go along with salaries in GROW, and that's and this limiter that I mentioned tags on to the notion of salaries as well. So the award is, I would say, it's focused very much on the number of jobs across the board, whether they're new or retained.
I would prefer seeing it tied to median salary rather than median or average.
We can certainly, as we build out the new program, I think that's good feedback. Off the top of my head, I don't know if the statute is silent or prescriptive on that. I don't know off the top of my head, but it's something we can look into. I agree with you philosophically.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions for Susan?
Yeah, this is Rosemary. I guess this is an example of what I'm talking about. And also, I agree with Marcia that, you know, we're talking about bringing jobs into a community, not necessarily creating new jobs in the community. And I just think that, and hopefully the new statute or the program will address that, because that really is a gaping hole when we talk about benefit to community. If I'm bringing the jobs in, you haven't impacted that community at all, because you just brought your talent someplace else into that community. And we need to really speak to new jobs and retain jobs of people that are locally based. So thanks, Marcia. But I think that we just really need to take a more critical eye on how we approve and the parameters of some of these programs.
Okay. Other questions or observations for Susan and the team? If there are none, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second? Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item on our agenda, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program, Listen Film, LLC, David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, Presenting. David.
Thank you. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends approval of one application under the Film Tax Credit Program this month. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budget that it is reasonable by industry standards. All of the content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. The application is Listen Film, LLC, who will produce Listen. We are recommending an award of $225,887.36, which includes a diversity bonus of $14,117.96. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Any questions for David? If there are no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Marlene Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Second.
Is that Fred?
Yes, it is, Chair.
Great. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Moving forward in our agenda, Aisha Glover, Chair of our COVID-19 Response Committee, is not able to attend today. I can report in her absence for the committee. I'm glad to see the Sustain and Serve New Jersey program is expanding with additional, and as always, I'm continually impressed by the work of our staff to deploy this funding in businesses in need across the state. So the item is Sustain and Serve New Jersey, Tara Colton, Executive Vice President, Special Projects. Tara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. We're presenting to you today a request to approve several updates to the Sustain and Serve program. Just by way of refreshing your memory, this is a program that the board approved in November 2020 that will provide grants to organizations to do bulk purchases of meals from New Jersey-based restaurants and distribute them. The meal cannot be resold, and we have been really thrilled with the level of interest and engagement from folks from all over the state who have been interested in receiving funding through this program. We are in the final process of reviewing applications, and the materials before you request your approval for the EVA to enter into an MOU with the Department of Treasury, that would allow EDA to accept $2.4 million in CRS funding with delegated authority to the CEO for an additional $2 million that would allow us to fund eligible requests that come in through the Sustain and Serve program, and delegated authority to the CEO to amend existing MOUs to reallocate those CRF funds. We're also requesting your approval for an extension of the deadline by which the grant recipients need to incur expenses from the restaurants that they are purchasing the meals from. Our original board memo was set that deadline as April 30th, 2021. And given that we're already in the middle of February, we are requesting a delegation into June, an extension into June, with delegated authority to further extend that if necessary. And then we're also requesting delegation to allow the authority staff to accept additional funding that could come in to further expand the pool of resources we have to fund the program. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions from Tara? If there's no questions for Tara, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
Marlene,
Robert
second.
Kimko.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Moving to the next item, authority matters, delegation of authority update and clarification, Christine Baker, Chief Legal and Strategic Affairs Officer. Christine.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. So in this item, we are asking the board to approve an update and clarification to prior delegations of authority. This is intended to address the realignment of titles and responsibilities that were announced on January 14th. Four of the authority's senior vice presidents were named as Chief Operations and Compliance Officer, Chief Community Development Officer, Chief Economic Growth Officer, and Chief Legal and Strategic Affairs Officer. We want to clarify that prior delegations to people who used to hold the title of senior vice president remain in effect to ensure implementation of the board's prior approvals proceeds uninterrupted. So we are recommending that the board delegate authority to persons holding the four new titles consistent with prior delegations to persons holding the title of senior vice president. Thank you.
Any questions for Chris?
Hi, this is Rosemarie. I'm sorry, Chris. I'm a little confused. Are we just matching titles to previous authority, or are we granting additional authority to because you now have a new level?
The prior. So, in other words, okay. All we're doing is making it clear that prior delegations to senior vice presidents. Those delegations now apply to the new title of that person.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Any other questions for Chris? There's no questions for Chris. Can I get a motion to approve?
Rosenblatt, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jane. Can I get a second?
Charles Sarlo, second.
Thank you, Charles. Any discussion? There's no all in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals, abstentions? That last aye was in favor, I'm assuming.
Yes, it was just late.
Great. Thank you.
No worries.
All right. The next item under Authority Matters is the extension of the MOU between the New Jersey EDA and Capital City Redevelopment Corp. Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, presenting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Good morning. Before you is a request for an extension of the MOU between the Authority and the Capital City Redevelopment Corporation for 1 year through February 22, The original MOU was executed in 2014 with a one-year renewal option, and it is renewed annually by each body for each year since then. As part of this MOU, the authority provides key support services to the CCRC, in particular staff support, administrative support, including but not limited to corporate governance, public information and board support, legal services through the Attorney General's Office, and policy and development assistance. Via this MOU, the authority will continue to work with the CCRC and the City of Trenton to support specific project development. In these efforts, the authority will partner with additional state and county agencies and other stakeholders in support of the overall revitalization of the Capital District. Any future transactional real estate activity may result in a fee for service work as agreed to by the parties and consistent with how the authority's real estate division customarily charges for its assistance. But that has not been the case. It's a provision of the MOU. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions on the update to the MOU between the NJEDA and the Capital City Redevelopment Corporation.
Do we have any questions for Danielle? There's no questions for Danielle. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny.
Keith Maloney, I'll second it.
Thank you, Jen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. We have one item on the agenda under the charter of the Real Estate Committee. Charles Sarlow is our chair there. Charles, would you like to offer a few words in advance of the real estate item?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I would. The Real Estate Committee did review the agenda item that is before the board this morning. We reviewed it with staff. That agenda item being an amendment to a higher education public-private partnership project that the board had actually approved back in 2015. It's hard to imagine that it's 6 years later, but as many of you know, real estate development projects tend to be complex. And this particular project, given the complexities with the PPP law and the public and private nature of it, is no different. So we're happy to see that the private developer continues to plow through the hurdles and continue with the project. The committee focused on ensuring that the request being made to the board is legally permissible. More specifically, we wanted to ensure that the AG's office opined that the request for a project extension was permissible under the statute, given the amount of time that has passed. We also wanted to make sure that the anchor tenant, that being a supermarket, still had a LOI or was still locked into the financials, so the project could move forward under the current financial pro forma. I want to thank staff on behalf of the committee for being responsive to the committee's requests. So on behalf of the Real Estate Committee, we submit this matter to the full board for their consideration. Thank you, Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Charles. So this item is the Higher Education Public-Private Partnership Program, New Jersey City University, the second amended application for West Campus, Blocks 4A and 6. Juan Burgos, Director of Finance and Development, Real Estate and Community Development, presenting. Juan.
Good morning, everyone. We're requesting that the members approve New Jersey City University's second amended application under the P3 program to permit its private partner, Crossroads Company, additional time to complete construction of its project. The last extension was provided through December 31st, 2021, and they're requesting an extension to December 31st, 2022. The amended application approved by the board is required because the authority retains the right to revoke the approval if it determines that a project has deviated from the plan submitted in the approved application. The prior board amendment approved an extension to December 31st of this year. Real brief history, as Charles mentioned, in September 2015, the board approved an original application for a $58 million project cart, which included 110,000 square feet, which would have included a supermarket, a fitness center, a tennis court, tennis courts on the rooftop, and a rooftop restaurant, plus 600 square foot, 600 unit parking garage, not 600 square foot. The First Amendment to the application essentially reduced the project size, and the board approved that in March of 2019. The project size was reduced from $58 million to $27 million, and it reduced the total square footage to 73,000 square feet, leaving just a supermarket. So that means that the fitness center was removed, the tennis courts were removed, and the rooftop restaurant, as well as the parking garage. The project had a drastic change due to the Riverkeeper litigation, and which was essentially there's the whole entire site, which is approximately 20 acres, is governed by a federal consent order, which is also monitored by DEP. It's a chromium site that's being that's been remediated, and the Riverkeeper litigation essentially was challenging the footprint and use of blocks, the original site, which was block 4, for the big development. And essentially, to move the project forward, the university and the private partner agreed to reconfigure the project so the chromium wouldn't be impacted. And essentially, they created a new project, which is an elevated supermarket. So it's elevated over parking, and it's parking on an additional side. And so the footprint impacting the chromium wouldn't have a building on it, which required the removal of all the development that I mentioned. The other reason why they need to reconfigure the project was the Hudson County Improvement Authority was going to own the parking garage, and the college nor the private partner come to terms with the 600-space parking deck. So between the litigation and the failure to make a deal with the Hudson County Improvement Authority, the project had to be reconfigured, and essentially it required a project extension. The original project had to be completed by September 9th of 2020, and it required an additional extension to December 31st of 2021. The new extension is required because they anticipated receiving their GROW application commitment at the same time that the original project extension was approved. So in March 2019, the board members approved the extension to the project timeline, and additionally, it approved the GROW grant. But the GROW grant commitment, although it was approved in March 2019, the commitment itself wasn't received till September 2019, and that was due to an extended review by the Attorney General's office and a change in process of how Treasury provides support letters. So between those two items, it delayed issuing the commitment letter for the IRR. In addition, during that time, they were negotiating with the city regarding the pilot and the redevelopment agreement, and that was also delayed due to COVID. So right now they have submitted a project schedule saying that they will be completed by November 2022, and staff recommends to provide them the additional month just in case there's construction delays to December 31st, 2022. And additionally, at the request of the executive team, we did a sister agency check for the Department of Labor Workforce Development and NJDEP for the private partner and its selected contractor, and they have been both cleared. And we were advised by the applicant that the private partner has applied for NJDEP permits to construct the application, and they expect approvals sometime in the summer or fall of 2021. Does anyone have any questions?
Questions for Juan?
Hey, Juan, it's Tim. Can you just clarify the DOL check, and maybe obviously Rob's on, he could comment if he has anything to add, to the extent applicable, and it's not really yet because they haven't started construction, but they're in good standing vis-a-vis their obligations to us and the state broadly on prevailing wage and things like that. think construction has already started.
Talking about the developer or?
Yeah. Talking about for this project, yeah, and in general, yeah.
I have to check, but I see in this contract that they attest and the ED has confirmed that they are paying prevailing wage. Right. So I'll take you guys' word.
Yeah, one, it's from in terms of our process, it's kind of premature because they haven't actually started doing stuff yet, but they've been doing all the things that they're supposed to be doing with regard to that so far.
That's correct. That would be in good standing for the past, not going forward.
Right, yep.
All right. Any other questions?
Well, so Robert Shimko, I have a question. So the project, they got rid of the fitness center, the restaurant, the tennis courts, and the parking structure. This is just going to be the supermarket and parking spaces underneath. Is that correct?
That's correct. There'll be parking spaces underneath the main site, and then there's an adjacent parking that they have. They're going to share with the college. They're going to have ground parking, and the college is committed to building a small parking garage above it. And they have a commitment from the college that they will have the ground floor parking in the adjacent lot.
Okay, and the project also has a project labor agreement tied to it?
That is correct. That is between that's required by the P3 agreement between the college and the private partner, and the private partner submitted a form of that agreement that they will enter into with the appropriate unions in the county in which the project is being performed.
So that is not a requirement for the Act itself?
It is a requirement of the Act, that it is.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, observations? If we have no further questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Marlene Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda is board memoranda. Tim Selden will be presenting, and there are a number of memos that he will provide commentary on. Tim.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have in your pack a few different memos that describe sort of the activities under a few different delegated programs, including the microloan program. There were 13 loans approved under that this morning. During this period, that's I think a great example of how we are trying to do more and pivot how we allocate the authority's resources to micro businesses and small businesses in particular, small businesses and micro businesses in particular. We hope to have quite a bit more approvals under that program in the coming weeks and months, and that's an exciting opportunity. I'm happy to take questions on the rest of the memos as well.
Great. Any questions for Tim on the board memoranda? If there's no questions, I'd like to move to the public comment portion of our agenda. I'd first like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and the process for this telephonic board meeting, as well as availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses seeking information. Danielle.
Good morning. Thank you. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Given the number of members of the public on this call, we would like to go over the NJEDA public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA web. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, municipality of residence if as applicable, and topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority Staff will prompt each speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure adequate time is available for all of those who wish to speak. And of course, as always, speakers may submit any comments or documents in writing by email to staff. Regarding availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses, members of the public seeking information on COVID-19 resources, we would like to direct you to the following website, bv.business.nj.gov, which is staffed by business advocates at the New Jersey Business Action Center. This site includes a chat feature staffed to answer your business-related questions related to COVID-19. You can also call the state's COVID-19 business hotline, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1-800-JERSEY-7 or 1-800-537-7397. This portal can also be accessed directly from the NJEDA main page, njeda.com. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1 and then 0 at this time. Our first question will come from the line of Jennifer Mathaway. Please state your affiliation or organization.
Good morning. This is Jennifer Mathaway. I am a partner with Genova Burns and speaking on behalf of New Jersey City University. I just wanted to take a moment to thank the board and the real estate committee for approving the extension request of New Jersey City University with regard to its P3 agreement with Crossroads Companies, which will result in a new state-of-the-art ShopRite coming to the West Campus and to Jersey City's West Side. So I just wanted to take an opportunity to thank the board for its consideration and for the approval today.
Thank you, Jennifer. We love thank yous.
I love giving them.
All right.
Thank you. We'll move on to the line of Louis Magazu. Please state your affiliation and organization.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lou Magazu. I'm an attorney with offices in Vineland and Atlantic City, New Jersey. I'm actually wearing about three hats, but I'll hopefully be able to ask my questions quickly so as not to burden the time. First of all, I want to congratulate. I'll add another thank you to the board for the Sustain New Jersey program. I am the executive director of the CEO group in Cumberland County, which is almost 50 businesses representing about 30,000 employees, 40,000 employees. In March, when the pandemic hit, we allocated $50,000 of our budget to fund our doctors and nurses and healthcare officials on the front yards of Inspira, located in Vineland, Bridgeton, and Elmer, and served 3,500 meals. We did that without knowing there was going to be a Sustain New Jersey program, but we're very excited to see that program rolled out, and we were pleased to submit our application and look forward to the termination. But kudos to the NJEDA and their staff for rolling out that program. I also, as you may recall from last month, represent the Atlantic City Jitney Association and Indira Motorcars on the emission reduction project, which I know is right now going to be piloted in Camden and Newark. Just wondering, when will, or have they already been, and maybe I missed them, the formal regs of that program be published?
Yeah. Hey, Lou.
Tim Sullivan.
Yeah, I was hoping Brian was going to jump in, but I could start. There are not sort of quote-unquote regs for that. I think the program details and the sort of the application and all that will be out, you know, next couple of weeks and months, but there's not a statutory, you know, Administrative Procedures Act rules process that will accompany that. Brian, anything you want to add to that?
Sorry, thanks.
Yes, I was just getting off mute, Tim, there. You're 100% correct. The authority uses pilot programs such as what we're doing with NJ ZIP to learn from initial rollouts and to refine those programs. Once those programs are refined, we kind of then set them in stone through the regulatory process. So we will not be filing regs at this time as we are piloting and kind of learning through that, but do hope to be launching that program in the coming months, learning from that, and then hopefully looking for opportunities to scale that program over, you know, whether it's later this year or really next year.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that information. The GROW and ERG program, I know sunsetted, and there's a new program coming out based on the governor's and the legislature's action last year. Do we know when the regs on that will be published on the successor program?
We haven't. We've not identified a specific timeline yet. The governor signed the bill a month and 3 days ago. And there are 15 different programs contemplated in it. 9 of them are brand new, and so we will have a steady diet of rules promulgated over the next couple months and probably through the balance of the year. The Economic Opportunity Act, I think, took a year plus to stand up the new applications, and hopeful to do better than that for sure.
What happens to businesses that want to come to New Jersey but are kind of waiting? Do they just wait? They obviously have to make some decisions. I particularly have one that's looking at a site in Ohio in real time right now, and they're waiting to see what's going to happen in New Jersey. Is there any kind of interim program or interim process, or do we just have to wait?
So the balance is we've got an urgency around some of the issues you're describing, because there are certainly companies that are making decisions, and we have to balance that with our long-term stewardship obligations of taxpayer resources. And so that's a balance we're going to try and strike. I'm sure we won't get it perfect, but we both have to move with dispatch and speed, and we have to move with compliance and oversight and the long-term integrity of the programs in mind. So we're hard at work trying to get those up as fast as we can, but again, solving principally for getting it right and getting it right as quickly as we can.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, and I will reach out just for maybe any other follow-up questions. But very much want to commend. I know all of you are working, particularly the board members, in a voluntary capacity, in addition to juggling everything else you have in your lives. Staff, as was noted earlier by a couple of the board members, is exceptional. But thank you as a taxpayer and resident of the state for your continued good work.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you. We'll move on to the line of Christopher Emigol. Please state your affiliation.
Good morning. My name is Christopher Emigol, the Vice President of Government Affairs at NJBIA. First, wanted to thank all of you and the EDA staff for your hard work to support the New Jersey economy and businesses throughout our state. Especially want to thank CEO Sullivan, who recently spoke to BIA and the Chamber's Joint Tax and Economic Development Committee about your exciting new tax incentive law that we were happy to support. Because you discussed it briefly, I did want to touch up on the 80% rule for the legacy GROW awardees. We really appreciate CEO Sullivan's comments on this point, but I wanted to reiterate that for the most part, these companies have built and developed what they promised. They created the jobs that they promised, and they've kept these jobs even in this awful public health and economic crisis. That's certainly not their fault. But even though they're still employing these people, there is an executive order still in place that does not allow people to be physically working like they used to, and I hope that is considered when thinking about their prior awards and what they're entitled to. Thank you very much for considering that, and BIA does look forward to working with you on the tax incentives in the future as you roll them out.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you.
And once again, if there are any additional questions, please press 10 at this time. We'll go to the line of Julie Tatani. Please state your organization.
Yes, hello, everyone. My name is Julie Tatoni. I'm an attorney with Wendell's Marks. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address the group. I have two GROW New Jersey-related questions with regard to the delegated authority for a waiver of the 80% rule for workers at the QBF site. So first, my first question is, how does the business apply for the waiver? Is this something that will be done via the IDMS portal for the 2020 annual report? And the second question is, if a business has maintained their employment level, but more than 20% of their employees are working from home and working remotely, are they still eligible to get the 2020 annual amount of tax credits, or do they have to defer it to year 11? Thank you.
Yeah, on the second one, Julia, what I might suggest it's probably easier to deal in the specifics of whatever the applicant is, so I might suggest we take that one offline, not for anything secret, just because it's probably easier to figure out the particular nature, whether it's a manufacturer or an office or, you know, where it is, you know, all the particulars will matter to that answer. On the general question, Bruce, do you want to jump in on process for seeking those accommodations, those requests?
Sure, and I'm going to echo Tim's comments of, you know, everything is fact-specific, so let's work one-on-one from a company perspective, and we'll be able to analyze each one individually. But from the perspective of how would one go about applying, it would be some of the documentation can be uploaded through the IDMS portal, and also just working with the relationship officer that's assigned to each account. So as they go through the process, the IDMS portal will and the job reporting function will have the opportunity to check boxes where individuals may not have been able to be working at the facility as a result of the executive orders. So there's a two-step answer to that question. It's one, yet there will be some things in the IDMS portal, and also just working with staff through the process as well.
Thanks very much, and I also want to thank staff and the board for the excellent job during this really trying and challenging period. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Much appreciated.
Thank you, and we have no further questions in queue. Please continue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional questions, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation in the meeting, and we'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Second, Dumas.
Thank you, Fred. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? No. Great. Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody. Be well. Stay warm. Stay safe.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.